You're listening to the Chronicles of Aguna, the Arsenal podcast.
I'm Martin Tyler, and you're listening to Harry Simeon.
Hello and welcome back to another live edition of the Chronicles of Aguna, the Arsenal podcast brought to you by 90 Min. As ever, I'm your host, Harry Simeon. And on this edition, we're going to be bringing you up to speed with all the latest Arsenal transfer news. We'll be discussing some of the stories, getting a little bit deeper into certain parts of Arsenal's transfer merry-go-round. Is that what we should call it? I don't know. I completely messed that up. Ignore me. But welcome. Hope you're all good. Also going to be taking your questions as well towards the back end of the show. Going to discuss something a little bit non-Arsenal related as well. We're going to quickly just touch on the Euro 2020 team of the tournament, which was, of course, announced today as well. So we'll get some thoughts on that as well. And, of course, we're going to be, I'm not going to say building up because how much can you really build up to a preseason friendly? But of course, Arsenal take on Hibernian this evening. That game is available for you to tune into via arsenal.com. Kicks off at 6 p.m. UK time. So we're going to be bringing you up to speed with what's going on in the lead up to that game. And of course, post-match. So at 9 p.m. UK time tonight, we're going to be live again for our second podcast of the day, in which we're going to be reviewing that match, picking out some of the talking points off the back of it, discussing some individual performances, etc., etc. So lots to come over the next 24 hours in terms of content. Right, let's get into it then. Let's kick off with William Saliba. Now, we've known that William Saliba's desire has been for a while now to return to France and join Marseille. Arsenal making it very clear, or trying to make it clear, that they are looking at him as someone who still has a role to play in the future. But clearly they don't feel he's ready right now. Clearly they don't feel that he's at a level at which they can promise him game time, enough game time to continue his development, to progress, etc., etc. Now, many Arsenal fans have been surprised by this, right? By all the reports we read, etc., etc., he enjoyed a good, successful loan spell at Nice last time around. But obviously, that hasn't been enough to convince Mikel Arteta and his staff that William Saliba is the man to come into the squad and replace David Luiz, who, of course, has left the club. It seems like Arsenal, you know, first of all, don't believe in Saliba personally, but then beyond that, don't feel they have enough either, because we've heard reports over the last few days about Ben White, and that is expected, I guess, to pick up a little bit more traction over the coming weeks because England's participation at the Euros is over. So we're going to have to watch this space on that one. We're going to have to see how that develops, and I'll come on to give you a bit of an update on that. But as I say, William Saliba is in France. We've all seen the pictures doing the rounds on social media. He is there. He is ready to undergo the medical and for the deal to be finalized. So William Saliba will be joining Marseille on loan until the end of the season. I want to make it clear, there is no option to buy in that contract between Arsenal and Marseille. There is no obligation for Marseille to purchase the player after the loan term expires. It is a straight up, plain as day loan deal that will see William Saliba swap London for Marseille. He made it clear he prefers to return to France. I know a lot of Arsenal fans have been a bit disappointed by that and felt like he probably should have, you know, tried or wanted or made it clear or, you know, preferred to stay in the Premier League and try and sort of get himself accustomed to the league, get himself up to speed. I probably think that's right as well. You know, I probably think that Arsenal should have done that. I probably think that Arsenal should, you know, have maybe put their foot down a little bit. But Charles Watts made a good point on a video that he put out earlier, and he said, when you think about the way that William Saliba has been treated by Arsenal, everything that's gone on up until this point is probably a little bit difficult for Arsenal now to kind of force the issue, to stand there and say, well, no, we want you to go here. when, you know, you've essentially spent an absolute fortune on this kid and decided very, very quickly, rightly or wrongly, fairly or unfairly, that he's not good enough, that he's not ready at this point, and you've cast him aside. Remember, Arsenal's cock-up in the first place led to William Saliba being a being not even a substitute, left out of the squad entirely for the first part of last season. So you've got this promising young talent who, you know, we can have a debate about whether his, you know, his head's been quite right after what's gone on in his personal life. There's been signs that maybe there's been a little bit of dissent there, but that all stems from William Saliba having been overlooked and then being left out. Whoever was to blame, Arsenal were responsible for getting William Saliba out on loan at the beginning of last season, and they didn't manage to do it. We know that there was talk of it. We know that they tried, but it didn't materialize. It didn't happen. It didn't come to fruition. And as a result, William Saliba essentially wasted 6 months of his career. And so Arsenal, as Charles Watts rightly kind of assumes, I think, are in a bit of a place now where they can't really go in too hard. They can't really try and force him into a move that he doesn't want, given that they've made it abundantly clear that right now they don't feel he's ready. They don't feel he's up to it. Talked about it in the past. The benefits of William Saliba going to Marseille are he's not going to find it hard to settle. He speaks the language. He's played plenty of football in the French top flight up until now in his career. I suppose the good thing about Marseille and why Marseille is a better move than Nice, for example, is that Marseille are one of the biggest clubs in France. Marseille will be playing European football next season. He gets to test himself at the, you know, at the European level as well as the domestic level. But there's also a big pressure in playing for a club like Marseille. The expectation is always there. You know, you go to Newcastle United. Yes, it's in the Premier League. Yes, we'd get a look at him in our league, in the environment in which we hope he will thrive in one day. But I think playing for a big club like Marseille is closer in terms of the pressure that you come under to playing for Arsenal than going to a sort of club mid to lower table in the Premier League. So I think there are some benefits to it. I think Sampaoli is a very, very good coach. I'd probably rather have Sampaoli coaching my young prospect than Steve Bruce, with all due respect to Steve Bruce. But, you know, there are a number of factors that make Marseille a decent move as well. It's not the one I would have preferred. I'm sure it's not the one that many of you guys would have preferred either. But it is a move that William Saliba wanted to make. And fingers crossed he can go on and produce and continue to improve and come back at a later date ready and raring to go. Moving on to Ben White, because we did touch on that already. Ben White, Arsenal, very, very interested in Ben White. And as Matt points out in the chat, he says it feels like the Ben White transfer has been picking up traction since 2017. It certainly does feel that way, Matt, because, of course, we've been hearing about this for weeks now. We heard about the initial bid knocked back by Brighton and Hove Albion. And my understanding of the situation right now, as I said to you guys maybe a week ago, is that a fee has been agreed. A valuation for the player has been submitted to Arsenal by Brighton and Hove Albion. And it's a valuation that Arsenal are willing to meet. To my understanding, where this deal is stuttering, where this deal has not moved forward, where we've hit a little bit of a roadblock, is in the fact that Arsenal and Brighton up until this point have not agreed on the structure of that deal. So Arsenal happy to meet Brighton's valuation, but it seems Brighton are unhappy with the way Arsenal want to meet that valuation, i.e. how much of the money is going to be paid up front, how much of it's going to be paid in installments, how much of it is going to be based on bonuses, etc., etc., etc. But as has been reported by a number of journalists over the last few days, there is a willingness on all sides to get this deal done. Ben White has agreed personal terms with Arsenal. He's allegedly told some of his closest friends and teammates, etc., etc., that he is very open to the move. He would like to move to Arsenal. So all is good on that front. It's just about now making sure that we can find that final agreement. And I think that agreement will be reached. We're not there 100% yet, as I say, and that is based purely on the structure of the deal. But I do think we will get there in the coming weeks. And I expect at this moment in time, on the 13th of July, 2021, that by the time the Premier League season kicks off, Ben White will be an Arsenal player. Just a quick reminder. Is it a reminder? Well, it's not really a reminder, but they're back. They're back. Our sponsors are back. Manscaped have renewed with us again. So we've got another brand new sponsorship deal currently running. Manscaped for all your male grooming needs. If you need to give it a little bit of a hedge trim, if you need to get yourself back in order now that the lockdown's starting to ease, now that you're able to get out on the town, then make sure you head over to manscaped.com for all your male grooming needs. Check out the lawnmower, check out all the brilliant products, the ball toner, the ball deodorant. Yes, you're probably cringing listening to this, but fantastic products, essentials if you're a gentleman, especially. So make sure you head over to manscaped.com for all your male grooming needs. You will not be disappointed. Top quality products at very affordable prices. And if you enter our discount code, which is 90min20, you'll get 20% off of your order at manscaped.com. So for all your male grooming needs, head over there. You'll be supporting not just Manscaped, but the Chronicles of Aguna podcast too. So check it out. Right. So we've discussed William Saliba. We've talked about Ben White. Now, what's going on with Manuel Locatelli, another player that Arsenal have been heavily linked with in recent weeks? Manuel Locatelli, and I think a lot of people have misread this quote. So there's a quote from Locatelli on his future, which I'm going to see if I can find it because I've heard a couple of people quoting it and they haven't really quoted it in the right way. Here it is. So this is the little extraction from his interview. He was speaking after Italy won Euro 2020, speaking to Sky Italia, asked about his future, and he had this to say: I haven't really thought about my next club so far. I was focused on the national team. From tomorrow, well, he said this on Sunday, so from Monday, we'll see what happens. Then he was asked, where is that bit? Oh my God, where have, I've just lost it. Hold on a second. This is, here it is, bloody advert in the way, that's why I couldn't see it. So a lot of people have taken this comment, right, as though he's saying he supports Juventus and he wants to join Juventus. That's not what Manuel Locatelli said. I think this has been reported incorrectly by a number of people up until now. He says, I support Juventus as a question. He doesn't say, I support Juventus. He says, I support Juventus. Like, as in, people are saying that he supports Juventus. And he said, I support Juventus. Right now, we're here for the national team, so I support Italy. So he's basically throwing it back as a question, as if to say, like, where has that come from that I support Juventus, rather than categorically saying I support Juventus? Because I've seen some people reporting that his words there mean that he absolutely 100% wants to go to Juventus. Now, I'm not for a second denying that probably is Manuel Locatelli's preferred destination. Most Italian-based players prefer to stay in the Serie A, and why would you not want to join a club like Juventus, who have an incredible squad, have some incredible talent, have a great manager returning in Massimiliano Allegri. But just that particular comment has been taken out of context by a lot of people. And it's important that I stress that he's not saying, yes, I support Juventus, I want to go to Juventus. He's saying, I support Juventus, as in people have been saying that. And he's kind of suggesting that he's never said that publicly. So that's the latest on that. Let's go over to the chat box because there are plenty of you in there. Big hello to everybody joining us live at the moment. To Alejandro joining us from Brooklyn in New York. What else have we got here in terms of your comments? Big hello to Inter. Inter saying, come on, Harry, it's clear as day he wants to go to Juventus. I'm not saying he doesn't want to go to Juventus. I just literally said, I'm not saying that he doesn't want to go to Juventus. I'm just saying that I've seen reports and I've seen some really reputable journalists quoting that as if he said, I support Juventus, but that wasn't how that comment was made. That's all I'm saying. If you actually listen to it or watch it, you'll get what I'm saying. It's not been said in the way that it's been reported to have been said. And I just wanted to clear that up. Yeah, he probably will end up at Juventus. It probably is his preferred destination. It, you know, most you know, most Italian based players, as I say, prefer to stay at home. And why wouldn't you want to join Juventus in that case? Get your questions into the live chat box. We'll pick up a few questions as well along the way. And we'll just quickly touch on the UEFA Europa League. Got so used to that over the years. The UEFA Euro 2020 team of the tournament. This needs just a quick brief mention, I think. So this is the team that UEFA went with. They've gone with Gianluigi Donnarumma in goal. I don't think anybody can really argue with that when you consider his heroics in a couple of penalty shootouts. He made some good saves along the way as well. Also, you know, named the player of the tournament. Across the defence, they went with Kyle Walker at right back, who I thought had a really good tournament. Leonardo Bonucci and Harry Maguire were the two centre-halves, with Spinazzola at left back. Spinazzola fully deserved. Bonucci fully deserved. I think Maguire had a good tournament when he returned to the side. But would you have put Maguire over Chiellini? Difficult one for me. Across the midfield, they went with Pierre-Emile Højbjerg of Spurs, who actually surprised me in this tournament because he showed himself to be able to play in a more advanced role than he does for Spurs. And I actually preferred the look of Højbjerg in the Denmark shirt. Maybe it's just because I can't stand Spurs, but I thought he looked a more complete midfielder in that. So, you know, no real complaints there. Denmark, of course, reaching the semi-finals as well, which was a fantastic achievement. Jorginho in midfield, I don't think anybody would argue with that. And he's alongside Pedri, who also really burst onto the scene and impressed people. Front three of Raheem Sterling, Romelu Lukaku and Federico Chiesa. I don't know about Lukaku. I thought he was good. I'm not sure, though. I'm not sure on that one. I'm not 100%. But that's the UEFA Euro 2020 team of the tournament. Let me know your thoughts on it in the live chat box. Let's go back over to the questions now. A big hello, first of all, to Daniel Mortensen, who joins us from Sydney, Australia. Matt says, we were linked with Jorginho and a lot of fans turned their noses up. Jorginho is now a Champions League winner and a European champion, as well as being in the team of the tournament. Was it a mistake not going in for him? I actually said at the time that I liked Jorginho and that I'd have considered making a move for him. I liked Jorginho from the days he played at Napoli under Maurizio Sarri. When he was brought by Maurizio Sarri to the Premier League, a lot of people got on his back very, very quickly. And I actually remember having conversations with friends of mine who were Chelsea fans who were adamant that he was the big problem, that he and Sarri were just, you know, not the right fit for Chelsea Football Club, that the style of football was boring, it was slow, it was tepid, it was uninspiring. And I've always kind of fought the battle for Jorginho in the sense of saying, I don't think that if you think Jorginho is crap, you necessarily, with all due respect, understand what it is he is in the team to do. You don't really understand what it is he is bringing to the table. And I think over time, Jorginho has proven his worth in the Premier League, in the Champions League, now in the Euros as well. He's shown himself to be a really, really good all-round midfield player who's capable of playing in a deeper role, making challenges, covering the right spaces. I think defensively, he's very smart in the way he takes up certain positions, doesn't really expose himself to the fact that he isn't the quickest or the most mobile. A good tackler, but also very comfortable on the ball, very able to pick the ball up from the back line and start play, constantly recycles the ball effectively, sets the tempo for teams, and that filters all the way through. And I thought at the Euros, you really, really saw the significance of Jorginho, how important he can be. And I think under Thomas Tuchel at Chelsea in particular, you've started to see his worth there as well. Fantastic player for me. I would have loved to have seen him at Arsenal. I think he's a much better version of Granit Xhaka. And I would have preferred him. Yeah, of course. I think we were wrong to turn our noses up. But what I will say, Matt, is it wasn't just Arsenal fans that turned their noses up on Jorginho. It was Premier League fans in general who, in my opinion, maybe struggled at the beginning to see what it is that he brings to the table and really understand the qualities and what the player is all about. Let's go over to Colin Young, who says, Harry, should we not be more concerned with players, especially the Deadwood not going out of our club. Yeah, it's a bit of a worry. You know, we've talked a lot throughout the course of this summer about players that need to go, about what we might be able to retain, you know, or recuperate for these players in terms of transfer fees and transfer values. And, you know, it's not going great, is it? I mean, you look at someone like Hector Bellerin, who we all kind of looked at the start of the window and went, well, we should be able to get about 15 to 20 million pounds for this guy. I know I said that's what I'd want for him. And here we are, you know, July 13th, and Hector Bellerin is being linked with a number of clubs, and there are a number of clubs said to be interested, but none of whom are actually willing to stump up the money that we as a fan base feel is worth. This could be another one that ends up leaving the club on a loan with an option or an obligation to buy, similarly to the way Guendouzi's gone, to the way Mavropanos is gone. And that doesn't really help Arsenal right now, does it, in terms of bringing money in? So, yeah, it is a bit of a problem. But as I always say, Colin, if everybody and their dog knows that you're trying to get rid of someone, if everybody knows that they are deemed surplus to requirements, that to you they are no longer valued, then they're not going to come and offer you top value when it comes to transfer fees. And Arsenal, in my opinion, were always going to have this problem. Sometimes you just have to cut your losses. And I'm not speaking about Bellerin specifically, but there are a number of players in that squad for me that if you get the opportunity to move them on, even if it's just to save on the wage bill, I think you probably got to just do it. And you've got to accept that you're not going to get what you think you're going to get. And, you know, we've been having this debate for weeks and weeks and weeks. And that's just the reality of the situation Arsenal find themselves in at the moment. But yeah, it is a concern, because in order to free up funds and bring in new players and clear space in the squad, you need to move people on. And if these people aren't wanted, if these people aren't particularly valued by those looking from the outside in, it's very difficult to make a sale. Even more so now, at a time we're still dealing with the impact of the global pandemic. Let's see what else we've got in the chat. Pat Charles says, what is the thing about Houssem Aouar? Is he joining Arsenal? Not to my knowledge. We had some reports last week that Arsenal had made an offer for Houssem Aouar, that it wasn't equal to the value that Lyon hold him at, but it was a first offer. We've not heard anything since on that, and I wouldn't completely rule this move out, but it's not close to happening necessarily. So no, I wouldn't get carried away on that one. As I say, there were lots of reports coming out of France last week suggesting that that bid had been made, and that the bid wasn't yet at the amount that Lyon would want for him this summer. But there was a feeling that Arsenal may go back in. I'm not sure Houssem Aouar is the priority target, though. I've always said he's one of those players that's on the list and may be turned to if we are unable to obtain some of our other targets. So we'll have to see. Going back to the team of the tournament, the Schick, Patrick Schick's sort of exclusion from that. Josh has this to say, Schick got done dirty. Yeah, I felt a bit like that as well. You know, when I'm talking about Romelu Lukaku, in my mind, Patrick Schick came up. So yeah, I think, I mean, they both got to the same round as well, didn't they? Belgium got to the quarterfinals where they were beaten by Italy, and the Czech Republic got to the quarterfinals where they were beaten by Denmark. So it's not like Romelu Lukaku went further in the tournament, is it? So yeah, I think you're right there. Assassin says, hi, Harry, love the content. What's your feeling now that Arsenal are going after Ramsdale? How do you feel about that? Surely if we're spending 30 million, Leno is off. I'm not completely against the signing of Aaron Ramsdale, as I've always maintained, but I'm not for spending 30 million pounds on him. I don't think he's worth that much. I really, really don't. I think he's a goalkeeper with the potential to develop further. Do I think he's an upgrade on Bern Leno right now in terms of, would I prefer him to be our number one? No, not for me. You know, I've got my doubts about Bern Leno. I talked a lot about him at various points last season and some of the mistakes he made and some of the issues I thought that he sort of caused in the way he simply plays the game. But no, I don't think Ramsdale would be an upgrade on Leno immediately. And I agree that spending 30 million, which is rumoured to be the kind of amount it's going to take to prize him away from Sheffield United feels OTT for me. And I feel that money can be better spent in other areas. So, yeah, that's my feelings on that. Don Saki says, Madison or Awar, who would you prefer in an Arsenal shirt? I think I'd probably pick James Madison just because I think he's, I don't want to use that Premier League proven phrase, but I know more about James Madison and it probably just feels like a more comfortable move. If I had to pick one, it would feel like the safer option because I know a little bit more about what we're going to get. Innie says, hey, Harry, does Arsenal have a one-year extension option on Saliba's current five-year deal? I'm not sure about that. Let me just quickly have a look whilst we're live. It won't take me a second. William Saliba, of course, signed by the club back in July 2019. Returned to Saint Etienne on loan and then spent a period at Nice on loan last season. I can't see any extension option on Transfermarkt. It says that his contract, his current contract, expires in June 2024. So not to my knowledge. You might be right. There might be something in there, but not to my knowledge. What else have we got? Inter says, do you think the club will do a mad one now the Amazon cameras are there to make themselves look good? I don't think the Amazon thing will have altered Arsenal's plans in any way. I think that Amazon documentary would have been in the pipeline for a while. It wasn't something that, you know, was discussed and agreed and, you know, instantly. I would imagine that talks were going on a while back and probably way before we finished off last season the way we did. That's just my view on it. What else have we got here? I'll pick up a couple more bits before we jump off. PAPP says, do you think we can move on 13 to 15 players and have any club done it before? Oh, I'm trying to think. I'm sure there's a club that's moved on 13 players before, but I'm sure a lot of those players were probably out of contract. To actually sell 13 to 15 players is a challenge. It would be very, very difficult. I don't expect Arsenal to be able to move on that many players in one window. And it's why, you know, when people have kind of had a go at me for sort of being a little bit lenient with Mikel Arteta at times and a little bit understanding of his situation and a little bit more, you know, or a little bit less sort of agitated by it all than others, it's largely because of this point. It's not just about bringing in players, which obviously when it comes to bringing players in, you're a slave to your transfer budget, right? You're a slave to what the club can do financially, but you end up in a position where it's all good bringing in players, but you can't keep stacking them up, right? At some point, you've got to move people on, and that has proved equally as difficult, probably harder than bringing in the players that we want. And that needs to be taken into consideration. This is a rebuild that is going on at Arsenal. It's not something that Mikel Arteta can click his fingers and do in a night, you know, or over one summer. It's going to take time. You know, the last summer we got rid of a few players. We moved players out on loan, et cetera, et cetera. Not as many as we'd have liked. And then we ended up doing some of that in January where we terminated a number of contracts and now we're at another summer. And so this is, I hate using this term because people use it to poke fun at Arsenal and at Mikel Arteta, but it is a bit of a process and that process is going to take time. The process is not just about bringing in players. It's not just about improving the ones we have. It's not just about implementing the tactics and the style of play and the game plan that you want. It's about moving people on as well. And that can quite often prove to be the hardest part. Big thank you to Innie for your very kind super chat donation, mate. Thank you so much. He also says, appreciate Josh Kroenke for reaching out to Bukayo personally. Yes, the Arsenal ownership are said to have reached out to Bukayo Saka personally off the back of the vile and disgusting racial abuse that he received after England's Euro 2020 final defeat. Incredibly unjustified and unwarranted. And unfortunately, there's always a few idiots that let down the whole country. But it's good to see that the Kroenkes have recognized that situation and and have made a move to kind of show their support as well for this young man who's incredibly talented, has got a really bright future ahead of him, and hopefully is able to move on from this pretty swiftly. He's got the support and the love of the Arsenal family and the wider footballing world. You know, even Tottenham Hotspur put out a tweet with a picture of Kane and Saka yesterday, which was, actually quite classy. And that's not something you normally associate with Spurs, but there you go. What I've come to realize yesterday we recorded the podcast, didn't we? And we talked about the Euro 2020 final, and I went in quite hard and strong on the idea of sort of how we stop the racial abuse online, how we stop any form of abuse online. And what I was actually quite pleasantly surprised by was that when I did finish working yesterday and I popped on the news, and you know, you're sitting there and you're watching TV and you know the news bulletins come up and all that, everything was really pro Bukayo Saka, pro Marcus Rashford, pro Jadon Sancho. And I like that, because in the past, players who have missed penalty kicks at crucial moments, or players who have cost teams in the past, you know, you think back to David Beckham in 1998, for those of you that are old enough to remember, he was public enemy number one after he got sent off against Argentina, and nobody held back. The press, the papers, yeah, social media wasn't around back then, and so he probably avoided a lot of it. But as I say, he was made into the country's number one enemy. And I actually like the fact that the big media companies, the news outlets, etc., have gone very big the opposite way here, because what it does is it, I guess, reassures me that it is just a few morons. When you see the numbers that kind of participated in that sort of thing and were acting up in and around Wembley on Sunday, you know, it's not just a tiny minority, it is a minority in comparison to the wider country and how many people there are, but there are way too many idiots still for my liking. But it was great to see him receive backing on the news, on all the various different outlets, because that makes me feel like Bukayo Saka is going to be okay. Because yes, there is a few that are being arseholes and a few making the noise, and that noise always seems to come through the loudest, but it isn't everyone. And that kind of, watching the way it was being reported on, probably restored my faith a little bit in the general public of the UK, because I tell you what, after the last few years, I've got my doubts on certain things. I really do. Final question. This one, we'll take it from Marcin Pankowski, who says, what do you think about Wout Weghorst from Wolfsburg? Almost 2 meters tall striker, much more able technically than Giroud, and would fit perfectly in the Premier League. I've got to be honest, Marcin, the only real sort of football I've seen from Weghorst was one Bundesliga game I worked on, and the appearances he made for the Netherlands at Euro 2020. I mean, I get what you mean, and I like the idea of, of a big target man striker. I think that sometimes Arsenal are missing that, and there's been a lot of times under Mikel Arteta where teams have worked out how to stop us, and that is by forcing us wide and putting us into, you know, different positions and making us cross the ball into the penalty area, etc. And at times I've looked at that and gone, yeah, we probably need a striker like that. But I'm not 100% sold on Wout Weghorst. For me, it would depend on the price. It would depend on what he would be available for. And as I've said before, until Laka or Oba move on, you know, we've got Balogun waiting in the wings as well. Gabriel Martinelli can probably play that role too. I think that it's not really a priority area for me anyway right now. Just finally, Matt responding to my Beckham comment. He says, the Beckham example isn't the same. He kicked someone and got sent off. Saka's penalty was saved. If Saka got a red and we had lost, the news would have been completely different and he'd be vilified. Yeah, I accept that. And what I'm not saying that the incidents were the same. What I'm trying to say is that the reporting towards David Beckham was very over the top and against him. There was no, because, you know, if you watch that back, I mean, he hardly kicks out at Diego Simeone. You know, it's not a big deal for me. It's two players in the heat of the moment. It's handbags. And I think that 9 out of 10 of us, would probably react that way to the biggest shithouse in world football at the time. That was Diego Simeone. And it wouldn't have been that big a deal. I'm not saying that, you know, it was the same incident. What happened to Saka was way worse in terms of the abuse he received. But my point is that I think we've moved on a little bit, not completely, but I think the big broadcasters have moved on a little bit in terms of how they might have reported this had the racial element not come into it. Like, I think they would have, let's say, for example, Jordan Henderson missed the penalty. I think that the style of the reporting now is more in favor of Bukayo Saka because people have realized that the race should never come into it, and it has. And why should it? And so we have to really, really support and make it clear and make a point that that's not what we want. Whereas when it came to David Beckham, nobody was going to accuse them of that. Eve, you know, and it was a completely different. Do you get what I'm saying? I think the mainstream media now have moved on and are a lot better, still not perfect, but are a lot better in reporting things in the right way than maybe they used to. And I think that is the way the Bukayo Saka thing was handled is kind of proof of that. I hope that makes sense. That's what I'm trying to say anyway. Don't know if I've put it across in the right way, but you know what I mean. Dupe says, why are my comments being skipped? They're not, mate. The chat box is constantly updating. If I miss your comments, I do apologize. I'll pick this one up from you. He says, talking about Mikel Arteta, he could have got rid of Bellerin last summer, but he chose not to. Villarreal offered 20 million for Guendouzi. Again, we chose not to because we wanted 30 million. Wolves offered 25 million for Ainsley. Wolves didn't offer 25 million for Ainsley Maitland-Niles. From what we read at the time, it was around about £15 million. It's a massive difference. Guendouzi, you know, 20 million. Did they really offer 20 million? Bellerin could have gone last summer. Yeah, agree with that. But, you know, obviously we didn't feel like we could replace him at the time. Remember last summer, Arsenal were in big shit in terms of transfers. Some stuff's been done behind the scenes. Some borrowing has taken place and some restructuring of debt has occurred since then. And that's why it looks like Arsenal are going to be able to go a little bit bigger in the transfer market this summer than they did before. And the club have recognized that they needed to do something. They needed to shift stuff around. Let's see. Just double checking on that Maitland-Niles thing, because I thought it was around about 15 million, and I'm just double checking it. So what I'm seeing here from The Guardian is that it was a deal that would total up to 20 million, but was comprised of £15 million plus add-ons. So that's what I'm reading now. But anyway, it's neither here nor there. He thought that Maitland-Niles was going to be part of the plans next season, and he wasn't. You know, we weren't in a position to just bin off everyone if we didn't have the money to be able to go and replace them. That's what you got to think about as well, right? It's not just as easy as saying, oh, we could have sold it. If we had sold Maitland-Niles last season at the start of the campaign, you know, that one, you could have passed with it. You know, you could have got by without him. Guendouzi went out on loan because I don't believe there was a concrete offer of that sort of money. And it goes back to what I said earlier on about people only being willing to pay for a player what they think he's worth to them, and people understanding that in your eyes, that player is not part of the plans. And so they're not. I don't believe for a second someone offered £20 million for Matteo Guendouzi. I'd like to see proof of that because, to my knowledge, Arsenal thought and hoped that they would get that sort of money in, and no offer came in. Arsenal would have bitten Villarreal's arm off for that because it was clear Matteo Guendouzi wasn't part of the plans. As for Bellerin, Callum Chambers wasn't fit at the time. Cedric was the only other right back in the squad, and Mikel Arteta thought that Bellerin was worth holding on to. And I probably back that. You know, I do. I've got to say, it's not as straightforward as fans make it out to be. when it comes to transfers. Look at it now. Look how many players we're trying to sell and we're having to loan them out with obligations and options and clauses and this and that for those players to be sold later on. It's not as simple as people make it out to be. Selling players is much harder than buying players. And as I've said earlier on, I think that's been probably the biggest challenge that Mikel Arteta has faced since he's taken over at the club. But anyway, we're going to leave it there and we're going to be back later on tonight, 9 p.m. UK time, for a review of Arsenal's pre-season friendly versus Hibernian. That one kicks off at 6 p.m. UK time today. We'll catch you about an hour or so after its conclusion to look back on it. Get your thoughts, get your take in the comments as well. I'll catch you all very soon. Until next time. Ciao.
You're listening to the Chronicles of Aguna, the Arsenal podcast.
I'm Martin Tyler, and you're listening to Harry Simeon.